Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle. You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are.
Yes, we are.
You know, I have to stop drinking. I'm drinking too early and hitting too many buttons.
Well, I said any time after 9 a.m. is okay, but not before that. Really?
Before that.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
I'm puppified.
You're puppified?
Yeah,
puppified. Is that something you can share on the air?
Beaglefied.
Beaglefied.
Yes.
Yes.
With, beagle pups.
We'll have to tell you. I will talk about that after we thank the people who pay the bills.
Absolutely.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional media to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Two guests today, both gifted actors, improvisers, comedians, and impressionists, and all-around fine people. And from what I'm looking at their promotional material, they are busier than a hungry baby in a topless bar.
Oh. Always keeping it classy, aren't you, Paul?
Like it? Yes. I'm sorry.
Happily.
Let me do the hungry baby in a topless bar.
Oh,
okay. Thank you.
Happily, our guests bring a class all their own. In the first part of the hour, we're delighted to welcome the brilliantly talented and always effervescent Rose Abdu.
Rose is here. Hello, Rose.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. And shortly thereafter, the equally gifted Jim, a man among men, Meskimen.
Here I am with the men.
Yes.
Standing over here with the other men.
Welcome.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you both.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So before we speak to our guests, how was your week, Paul?
My week was good.
Yeah?
My week was good. Yeah.
Why is that?
Two more festivals for The Beating, the short film that we did. We got in San Jose International Film Festival, and we just found out yesterday we got in Bel Air Film Festival, which is nice that we can be in a festival that we can drive to rather than fly to.
Absolutely.
But very, very excited about that. And just, you know, over the moon.
Yeah.
Made a mistake on the way here, though.
How
Stopped
so?
At Subway. You know me? Bit of a foodie. Like my food. Went to Subway. And I used to work in a deli when I was younger, so I know good deli meat.
Uh-huh.
So I always stick with, like, tuna.
You mean Subway is
and
not
Subway.
Good
no,
deli
no. Subway is not good deli meat.
It's just super thin.
No, no. It's just nitrates, you know, like taste, you know, but anyway, that's not the point. The point is that I will stay with tuna only because how much are you going to screw up tuna? And I strayed today, and I shouldn't have. Did the chicken bacon ranch thing, and it was very off-putting.
Really?
Just say, yeah. Yes. I've discovered that the chicken at Subway is the exact same consistency and mouthfeel of tofu. The grilled,
did
the
you
grilled
say mouse feel?
I go to a very unusual Subway. Yes.
Yeah.
No, mouthfeel. The mouthfeel. Yes, yeah. it has the mouthfeel of a Mr. Clean magic eraser. It's exactly like that. You don't do the Subway
mush
thing,
now.
Do you?
You're
a foodie.
You know,
guy.
I do the Subway thing, but
do
the
you?
Only thing I do at the Subway is the egg whites and ham.
Oh,
flatbread.
Really?
Yeah.
You've got the whole thing down.
Yeah,
is that called the Sterling? Is it like one of those delis where they name the
it
sandwich?
It is, yes. Actually, the one by my house
is.
Yeah,
calls it the Sterling? Yes.
Because I harass them.
But how was your week?
It's good. As I said at the beginning of the show, puppified beagles, two of them. I adopted them. They're both rescues and 5 years old. Beautiful boy and girl. Their names, they came with the following names. She, Vegas. Go figure.
Yeah.
And he, Freckles, go figure.
Wow.
And they've been changed to he is Cooper and she is Rooney.
I don't know. I think you're missing an opportunity. Give it up for Freckles in Vegas, ladies and gentlemen. It just seems to scream showbiz.
I love Rooney.
Rooney, which actually I took from a Disney show. Liv and Maddie Rooney on their show,
really?
Whatever the name of that is. I think it's called The Maddie Show. I don't know what it's called. But.
I've learned, and I won't say how I learned this, but if you're in a relationship with somebody and you get a pet together, make sure you pick a gender-neutral name. Because if you don't, she'll leave you, and you'll be outside at 11 o'clock at night going, pumpkin scene! Pumpkin scene! So, it's good that you have gender-neutral names.
Thank you. So, yeah, so that's occupying a great deal of my time.
Now, you're a beagle guy, though. You've had beagles before.
I have.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. Three?
Yeah.
And are they as vocal as everyone says? Because we were talking about Siamese cats before, and I know I had Siamese cats, and they're very, very vocal. Beagles are barkers, aren't they?
They can be.
Yeah.
If they want to be. And the girl has the classic beagle howl. Now, I've had no beagles that have done that.
Right.
They might have had it, but they never did it. She has it, and it happens when I leave. That's when I hear it. So. Oh. But it's heartbreaking because you just don't want to leave. You know, she's like crying.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. That's why I was a little late today.
You normally
had to talk her down.
Yeah, talk her down. All right, let's talk to these folks. These very patient folks sitting to our my right and your left here. Our first guest is best known for her television roles as Gypsy in 25 episodes of Gilmore Girls and Senorita Rodriguez on Disney's That's So Raven. Other notable TV appearances include Bunheads, Psych, Parenthood, Shameless, Two Broke Girls, Pretty Little Liars, Malcolm in the Middle, Monk, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Which I watched the clip of you and Larry David on the floor in Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was hysterical. An alumnae of Second City, Chicago's famous improvisational theater, she's the recipient of an LA Weekly Solo Performer of the Year Award. I was nominated for that, but I didn't win it. I'm not bitter. Next few weeks and months, you can catch her in the features Welcome to Me with Kristen Wiig, Cake with Jennifer Aniston, and upcoming episodes of Castle, HBO's Comeback, and IFC's Garfunkel and Oates. They are hysterical. Please welcome the girl with the rose tattoo, Rose Abdu.
Hello.
Hello.
It's so nice to be here. That's actually one of my dreams, Paul, is to be in the stage play of the Rose Tattoo.
Just
because I want the marquee to say Rose Abdu in the Rose Tattoo.
Yes.
I'm finally an age where I think I could pull it off.
Yes.
But I don't have any tattoos in real life.
You
I
don't?
Just have to clear that. No, I'm very, very squeamish when it comes to tattoos.
Really?
No,
any tattoos collectively in the room?
I've never had a tattoo, but when I see a tattoo on anyone, I have to really use every acting ability that I possess to say, that is beautiful. That looks great. Because they physically make me sick.
I have one idea for a tattoo that I want to do, and I still think I'm going to do it. And it's a tattoo up my spine of my height at different ages.
I love it.
Like a door jam. Paulette.
Should do the actual door jam.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
with the tattoo thing, you know, I mean, it's gone beyond now with everybody. Yes. I mean, it's not just a tattoo.
It's a whole sleeve. I can't look at the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know if God intended for that.
I don't know why you would put anything on your body that you wouldn't have. I mean, even the stuff on your wall, you want to change eventually.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
But people love them. And when you get one, I think you want
I think it gets addictive.
Yeah.
Yeah. George Carlin once said the best tattoo he ever saw was, or that he wanted to see, was on a guy's back, and it said, please let's never anyone tell this guy all the goofy shit we wrote on his back. He thinks it's a pirate ship. That was brilliant.
Well, taking them off, I understand, is quite painful.
So. Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
Well, putting them on is painful. Do we have any tattooed people?
No, we don't.
Nothing?
No.
Nothing?
We're all
this is going unmarked. To be a tattoo-free interview. Sorry I brought it up, to be honest with you.
Well, you didn't bring it up. I brought it up.
Well.
We brought it up in your promo thing. So, okay, so you have a ton of stuff on the play. I looked at your IMDb page, and everything is just completed.
I do. It's very exciting.
So can you tell us about what we can expect? The Kristen Wiig thing, is that the one that's directed by Shira Piven?
Yes.
Shira Piven, phenomenal Chicago actress.
Fantastic.
That I was blessed enough to do Under Milkwood with at the theater building.
Sister of Jeremy Piven. And I've known her
brilliant
for
actress
years,
in her
and
own
she
right.
is a wonderful director as well.
Yeah.
And it's a very unusual movie where Kristen Wiig wants to become like an Oprah figure. And she actually wins some money, and she becomes. I play a casino worker that gives her a big suite in a casino, but it's a very unusual script, and I don't know if they want me to say more than that. But but it's really an unusual independent movie.
And did Shira write it too?
She did not write it.
Okay.
I can't remember the writer's name, and I liked him so much.
Oh.
I feel bad about that.
He used to like you too.
He used to like me too. I know.
This moment.
I hope he's not listening. He's really wonderful. But I also did the movie Cake. With Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
And I believe that this could be her gravity, you know?
Really?
I really, I don't think it's overstating it. I think she's going to be so fantastic in this movie. This movie, the audition said specifically, must be fluent in Spanish. My mother is Dominican, born in Dominican Republic, but I am not fluent. I conjugate so slowly that I am embarrassed to say I speak Spanish the way a person who just got here would speak English. So I'm too shy to do it. But the audition was to speak completely, and I didn't speak English once, and I thought, I don't know if I can pull this off. And of course, I had my mother and Google Translate help me with the lines, and I got the part. So I'm very proud of that, because I'm not speaking in my native language.
Now, do you find, because I speak, I don't speak much Italian, but when I do, I speak the Italian that I heard from my father.
Yes.
And when I go over there, Monica and I were there last year, they laugh at me because it's like, why do you speak like the old people?
Right.
Because the, because the dialects are so outdated.
And this movie was set in Mexico, and there are colloquialisms. You know, I spoke Dominican Spanish, not Mexican Spanish, so I had to, Adriana Barraza, who was nominated for an Academy Award for Babel, I think it's pronounced Babel.
Babel.
She helped me because she's in the movie with Jennifer Aniston, and she was actually our dialogue coach on the set.
Right.
So it was extra hard because I had to speak Spanish and as well as have it be Mexican Spanish.
Oh,
so I'll be just so grateful if I don't end up on the cutting room floor. I mean,
and what
it
can
really
you give a little synopsis of that one, what the sort of subject matter of that one is, the Jennifer Aniston one, or, you know, I don't want to give away too much.
Her son and she are in a terrible car accident, and then hilarity ensues. Now,
one of those.
That same
one
old
of those
premise.
Where she, yeah, I can't, I don't think, you know, I don't remember, Paul. I really only read the parts that I'm in. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know that De Niro did that joke once. Like, how does an actor read a script? Which is my line, bullshit, 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 bullshit.
Well, remember
bullshit,
back
line,
in the
line.
Day, Margie Bank was this wonderful Chicago actress that did Sheer Madness for 13 years.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah.
And she said to me, and then they say blah, blah, blah. And then I say my line. And then they say blah, 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 blah. And then I have my line.
What's
sort of like.
Who's the wonderful actress who's in all of the Christopher Guest films?
Kathleen O'Hara.
Who does that great thing in Guffman.
Isn't she?
I want to do that acting where you look at some. It's Guffman, yeah. Where you look at someone and you close your eyes, and then you turn back, and then when it's not your line, you open your eyes. Is that Guffman or is it for your consideration?
Maybe for your consideration.
Okay,
she's fantastic. I got to meet her. Second City. We had that's a huge part of my training. Is I was at Second City and for the 50th anniversary, all of the SCTV people and everyone came back. It was a wonderful reunion. They actually chartered a Southwest Airlines plane and flew us in.
Oh,
so
wow.
We felt, I mean, we landed at an airport hangar and you felt like a beetle getting, you know, where the steps open and you're indoors. It was great. It was really fun. But I got to meet her.
I saw the Facebook pictures on that. It was
really
unbelievable.
A lot of fun.
I met Catherine O'Hara in much more awkward circumstances. Because there's a phenomenal pizzeria in Venice called Abbot Kinney Bagel Crust Pizza. And they have this wonderful, crisp, as you would imagine, bagel crust dough. And I'm in there with my brother-in-law who was in town visiting. And he said to me, he goes, who's that woman who was the wife in Beetlejuice?
Oh.
And I said, Catherine O'Hara?
Oh, no. She's
and he's like, yeah. I'm like, why do you ask? He's like, because she's right behind you.
Oh, no.
And I just turned around and I was like, sorry, I thought we were talking about you in the abstract. She's like, that's
her.
Okay. She's
I also her. Love, other. Speaking of other Second City people, bringing it back to me, of course, Paul.
I'm reading the cards,
Fred,
Rose. I'm reading
Fred,
the cards.
Fred just, Willard, who was in a movie called All Stars, which I just went to the premiere last night. At Paramount, and Lance Kinsey, who is a Second City very talented actor, writer, director, directed a movie, and in it is Fred Willard and Richard Kind and myself, Miriam Flynn, and a bunch of other really talented people, and it's called All Stars. And it actually, there's another screening tonight at Raleigh Studios.
Oh, okay. And it would be
really funny movie.
Oh, good.
Wonderful. And it's about girls' fast pitch softball teams.
Oh,
like
wow.
Like 8 and 9 year old leagues. And the parents that take it way too seriously.
Oh, okay.
So it was a very good movie, though.
Do you prefer working in films over television?
You know, I have to say, I think I like television because the pace is much faster. Mm-hmm. And the first time, because I come from a theater background, the first time that I worked on a television series, when they said, okay, now we're going to do that again, I looked around like, well, I was perfect. So why did I have to do it? And I remember them saying, well, there was a boom shadow. I was like, well, that's not my problem. Now I have to do it again. So the doing it again in movies, and that is the technical term, Paul, but doing it again.
Yes, yes.
The repetition is almost more than I can take. Although, I have to say, coming from a theater background, I haven't done a run. Like, Laughter on the 23rd Floor was the last time I'd done 8 shows a week.
Right.
And I just was thinking yesterday, it was 2 show days. You would look out into the audience and think, did I say that line already? Was that the earlier show? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole different discipline. So I think television is better for me.
Well, and also, Rose, you, like me, did a one-person show.
Yes.
And that's one of the things. You do a one-person show twice a day, which I was doing.
Very difficult.
And it's just that. And when you have, in my case, 42 pages of text in my head for the whole thing, I don't know how long your script was, but when you go up with that much in your head or don't know where you are, you forget, like, how to tie your shoes.
Everything.
You forget everything that you ever knew.
I used to do my one-person show. Actually had an intermission. This was back in the day when people would really go get candy and then come back and not just leave. I mean, well, they did for mine anyway. Everyone stayed. But I have to say, when I did go up.
Well, they had to bring you candy, wasn't that
part
of it?
They brought me candy, yes. Yeah. And then I did go up, but I thought, well, who's going to know? I wrote this. Like, I got so freaked out that I didn't know what came next, and I thought,
you're still technically
I could just
writing
make
at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
My friend Kevin Tice said that once. He goes, just remember, there's no going up. It's just last-minute edits.
That's a lot of fun. And working improvisationally in television, though, would probably be my favorite, because then it incorporates everything, you know, that I learned at Second City, plus when the camera's rolling and just letting it go. And I haven't had a chance to do that much, but Curb Your Enthusiasm was one of those.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that freedom of the way it is on the Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Well, that was, I remember seeing Jeff Garland at the craft service table, and he said, don't let Larry see me looking at you. You know, he just likes it to be fresh. We're not talking. We're not doing anything. And Larry David, right before the cameras, will say, okay, you have Diane Keaton's phone number. I want it. You won't give it to me. Go. And that's all that we knew.
Wow.
I was an interior decorator, and whatever you see in season 1, episode 5, called The Interior Decorator, named after Rose Abdu, The Interior Decorator, is just us just playing. Really fun.
That's all I got.
Really
sound
fun.
That's pretty appropriate.
Yeah.
Very appropriate. But we wrestled. I remember in hitting the floor that all of that took. I didn't know that was really going to happen. The big, the wrestling fight that you end. You know, any Curb fans out there? If you
well, see and it. Also we can tell people to your website has the clip of your reel on it. Can you or is that just
is
that just through the agency or can anyone get to that?
I think anyone can get to it through Actors Access. Or do they need my password?
Oh, I don't know.
Which I don't remember right now.
Actors Access.
What a great service.
Yeah.
Listen, I have a question for you because all of the young ladies that I work with at I have a supper club here in Los Angeles called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, which is a very
Bravo!
I love a supper club.
Speech.
I have several outfits for your supper club.
You do?
Yes. I can't wait to go to your supper club.
Good. Well, come along. We produce the best of Broadway performers in concert and nightclub artists. Great American songbook stuff. But all these girls, this is what they will ask me. They will say, of all the television shows that you have done, Rose, you've done Castle, The Mentalist, Baby Daddy. I'm going to pluck those three out of the many that you've done. Which of those leading men in those shows
did you like? What a wonderful question. I will have to say, I just shot Castle, and it will premiere September 29th for the premiere episode. I did not get to meet Nathan Fillion, so he's out of the running. The Mentalist, Simon Baker, is delightful, and he smells delicious.
Really?
I don't know if it was the mango peach tea he was drinking or his just natural scent.
Really?
But he was very, very kind to me, and I had to eat donuts throughout our entire scene. So it was just a mess of powdered sugar, and he was just so kind. He was very kind.
But his smell is that prominent to be noticeably pleasant.
You know, two people asked me, what does he smell like? So that's what made
really?
Before the job. They were like, find out what Simon Baker smells like. You know, when women are fans, they want to know everything.
Really?
So I had never thought, oh, Simon Baker, I think he's cute. But then when I sat with him, I thought, well, he has a lovely fruity smell as well. And that enhanced him.
Because
enhanced
the word on there's people who are known for not like McConaughey is supposed to smell like a roofer.
And looks like he smells like a roofer.
Yeah.
That's another thing I don't care for, body odor or tattoos.
Right.
It's not Rose does have to use gay. But what was Baby,
Baby Daddy?
He's the guy in Baby Daddy.
The two young
They're delightful. They're really lovely. They convinced me to keep my flat screen TV. I'm old school. My husband wanted to get me a new thin television, and I was like, everything. You remember in Diner, the Ponderosa looks fake. Like, I'm that person. I said, oh, it all looks like Masterpiece Theater now. Mm-hmm. It's two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Not right. two, number two, but like...
Right, right.
Too high res.
Yeah, it was too high. It looks like a play. Now everything looks like a cheaply lit play. Right. And those two guys are like, Rose, just stick in there. Get used to it. So I just remember talking to those adorable guys at Baby Daddy about, please join the 2014 and...
It's a funny show.
It's a cute show. Very cute.
Can I pimp you to do an impression for me? I would like to hear Alice.
Speaking of old school television,
from the Honeymooners, explaining why she doesn't need a flat screen television.
One of my favorite shows from back in the day. Well, I'll tell you what, Ralph. It's not going to fit in with the decor. My sink is our Tomorrowland. You remember that? The stove is my Frontierland. Alice. But my favorite one was when he said, walking down the street when Norton lost his job.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going to go down to that sewer tomorrow. I'll do Ralph, too. I'm going to go down to that sewer tomorrow morning, get Norton his job back. You're not going down to that sewer tomorrow morning, Ralph. There isn't a manhole in New York you could fit through.
My favorite line of that was...
Your husband is over there smiling.
What is... I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. It's... Norton, what's icky? Yes. What is it, Ralph? He goes, well, Alice just said it was icky. I don't know. Must mean fat. So that was the only choice.
Peanuts. What am I going to do with peanuts? Eat them like any other elephant.
Priceless. I do one impersonation, and you're an impressionist as well.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite that you do, Jim?
Yes. Is this the start of my interview?
No. We'll get to you. But
not
throw
your
it
turn,
in anyway.
Not your
We're
turn.
Talking my turn.
We're talking impressions.
The woman is speaking.
Yes. Okay.
It's we can, like at my house. When the
Paul
woman
is overly excited today.
No, I just I like we never talk impressions here. I only do one impression. I do a very specific impression. I do one actor in one movie.
All right.
So
which
I do Nicolas Cage. In Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh, well, very nice.
You can't just say that now without doing it.
What is with you, Peggy Sue? Last week you say if you love me, you won't. This week you say if you love me, you will. That's a guy's line, woman. Humiliator.
That's all I got.
Nice.
I could see all the I teeth. Got. I could actually see the teeth.
Yes. The Barney piano key teeth. Yeah. That he
How does
had.
Nicolas Cage smell, I wonder?
My guess is not so great.
I really love
him, though.
No,
he's
great.
A person that I would really like to work with.
What's
I would like to work
to him,
with all of them.
He hasn't really done a film. He's one of those guys, though, and you know that he's sort of in on his own pop culture joke.
Sure.
He knows full well how he is perceived, and he's not a dumb man. And the only thing that ever bothered me about Nicolas Cage was that I'm not gonna change my name. I'm changing my name from Coppola so that I can make it on my own. Now forget the fact that my Uncle Francis is going to direct me in the first eight films I do, but I'm not going to ride on that Coppola name. You know,
I did not know that.
Yeah. His uncle is Francis Ford Coppola.
And Talia Shire is his aunt.
Talia Shire is his aunt, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who's Jason Schwartzman's
mother. Sophia Coppola is his cousin. We could do this all day. They're
really
Italian. They procreate.
Really?
Crazy.
It's all in the family.
Oh, man.
We should do our arts calendar, Michael.
Should we?
And then we'll chat with Jim and Rose as well after we do this. But do you mind if I kick it off? Is that all right?
You took my intro for Rose. Go ahead.
Did I take your intro from Rose?
Yes, you did.
I apologize.
But it's okay.
All right. Well, you can introduce Jim then.
Yeah, of course I will.
When we get there. I'm sorry. I didn't realize
I did that. No,
you're angry with me, aren't
Not
you?
Not at all.
We're going to talk about this now?
We will.
Okay.
No.
Our lives. Dude, I don't have anything for that. What do I? That's all I got.
Yeah.
Our lives can change. Oh, this is perfectly fitting. Our lives can change in an instant. One moment you're getting engaged, and a few surreal moments later, you're sitting among a group of strangers in an intensive care waiting room, praying your fiance will survive a ruptured brain aneurysm. I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's darkly humorous. I can say that. I Want to Hold Your Hand is a moving and darkly humorous look at life outside the waiting room when you try your hand at living again. Theater of Note, phenomenal group in town, continues its 2014 season with the world premiere of I Want to Hold Your Hand, written by Eric Patterson, directed by McCarran Kelly. Cast features Keston John, Judith Ann Levitt, Alma Fellin, Kirsten Vengsness.
Lena Film.
What's that?
You have Alina here.
Do I have Alina?
Mm-hmm. Alina okay. Fellin.
Alina Fellin. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You want to do this? You still pissed?
No, not at all.
And Phil Ward and Nicholas S. Williams. I Want to Hold Your Hand plays through August 30th at Theater of Note, 1517 North Cahuenga Boulevard in Hollywood. For tickets, 323-856-8611 or visit theaterofnote.com. And, of course, theater has the affected R-E spelling, as it should be.
Yes.
Yes.
As it should be, only yes. here in Hollywood. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, I did a little theater this yep. weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, this past weekend.
Oh.
I had the pleasure of attending Broadway Under the Stars at the Ford Amphitheater, which... Have you been there?
I've always yeah. wanted to go.
Across the way from Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm.
It is wow. so lovely, and it's about a 700-seat theater, and it's just banked right up against those hills, and the hills actually are the backdrop for the actual stage. So it's breathtakingly beautiful, and it was an evening with Jennifer Holliday from Dreamgirls on Broadway, and Danny Gerwin and Chad Kimball, who we had on the show.
She was the first. She was the one who won the Tony for was
Dreamgirls.
Effie.
Yeah. And she, I have seen her many times, but something's happened since the last time I've seen her. She's become actually quite present and involved. She, in prior times that I've seen her in concert, she's always an incredible singer, of course, but there seems to be a distance between her and the audience. And I don't know what prompted that before, but now she is quite chatty, and she told some wonderfully interesting stories about her career. And at a time in her career, she reached a point where she simply couldn't work. Nobody would hire her, and I think it was all the diva kind of stuff that was coming out of Broadway and that experience and the aftermath of that. And she sat down with Marvin Hamlisch, and he gave her a kind of a father-daughter lecture about what she needed to do to get rid of that. And he said,
a little too prominent, an ego too early?
Perhaps, or, yeah. And he said, if you do these things, and also it's the kind of music that you're wanting to sing that that people aren't attaching themselves to. So if you do this, 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 and this, I, for one, will hire you. And she said, okay. And she had never heard of the songs that he had suggested.
Wow.
And she went and learned every single one of them. He hired her for one date, and he kept her working for years after that.
Wow.
And they had this amazing... And she said, I owe the rest of my career to that man, because he was the one that kind of changed my life.
And that was that was this past weekend?
This past Saturday.
And it was
evening.
A fundraiser,
Eric
wasn't
Bergen
it?
From Jersey Boys also. Part of the money's raised that evening went to the Actors Fund. Mm. Yeah.
And that's a David Galligan.
David Galligan directed it. Beautiful yes. job, Lee Martino choreographed. And Eric Bergen, quite frankly, did you see Jersey Boys, the movie?
No,
he made
I'm
his
dying
debut.
To see it.
And he was not in the original Broadway company, but he did do Bob Gaudio in the national tour.
And a wonderful gentleman. We had him on the show last year.
Yeah.
And just hysterical.
He is on a series. Got a series out of that movie, which he's shooting in New York now. So
it was great.
Yeah. But a lovely, lovely night. If you to our audience, if you have never been to the Ford, you should make it a
no, you're right. That backdrop is just
John Anson Ford Theater in the Cahuenga Pass in Hollywood.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
And
if you would be so kind as to introduce Jim, since I was remiss in introducing Rose. I'm just so enthused because Rose
I know. I know you are. And, yes. and she's pretty to look at, too, you know.
That she is. That
Our
she
next
is.
Guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a well-known film, animation, and TV actor whose credits include Apollo 13, The Grinch, Frost Nixon, The Punisher, Not Forgotten, There Will Be Blood, Friends, Seinfeld.
A lot of people haven't seen that. There Will Be Blood, Friends, and Seinfeld. It's a little-known short, but it was very successful.
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He provided the political impressions in Jib Jab's internet shorts, including the sensation This Land. More recently, Jim has had a recurring role on the TV series Parks and Recreation and appearances on America's Got Talent. He regularly performs at the Golden Age Theater in downtown Hollywood, a block west of the famed Chinese Theater, where he is directing and performing August 23rd and 30th in the L. Ron Hubbard story, A Lesson in Lightning. A high-action tale with just the right amount of wit and humor. Please welcome Jim Meskimen. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
That's the most unusual pronunciation I've ever heard.
Oh, really?
That was very creative. Meskimen. Just take a running leap at it. That's what I do.
Yeah, okay, Meskimen. That's about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for that kind introduction.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, Jim, we have actually, Rose and I have a mutual friend that you may have worked with.
Yeah.
We are great friends with Jim O'Hare, who plays Jerry on the Parks and Recreation.
Okay. Yes, I know Jim. I know. I've worked with him a couple times. Yeah.
And what did you do on Parks?
I have done 6 episodes, or maybe 7. And I play a character named Martin Housley, who is always I'm always an MC for an awards or a beauty pageant or a telethon. Or
the local guy.
The local guy, yeah.
And I,
you know, when I got the role, and I got it in the first season, so I've been doing the show since 2009, here and there. And when I got the role, it was just an MC guy who was kind of full of himself and full of beans or whatever. And so, you know, that's easy to do. But then I worked it in, because I'm an impressionist, I worked in a little bit of like he's not a very good impressionist, but he likes to do impressions. So that's now also part of the character.
Okay. And because I already teased the fact that you do impressions, can you share some of the bad impressions that he does?
Well, you know, like he'll do Richard Nixon. I mean, who does Richard Nixon for a public event, you know? Or I'm going to do Johnny Carson. I do a really broad Johnny Carson, you know. That kind of
thing. Now, for your
stuff.
Thing, was comedy was comedy first? Was being an impressionist first? Was being an actor first? What was sort of your launching?
Yeah, well, I've been very conflicted about it most of my life, but I finally cleared it up. My mother is an actress, a rather famous one, Marion Ross of Happy Days.
Yes,
and
a lovely lady,
and still working, and working today, as a matter of fact, somewhere on a film. She's going to be 86 this October.
Wow.
And she's just doing great, you know, fantastic person.
Blessed. Wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Very blessed. And so, you know, I was a bit confused about being an actor and what I wanted and what it all meant, because Happy Days was a huge hit. I mean, just like things aren't hits anymore, like TV shows.
Pop culture icons.
Huge, you know, when there were, you know, 10 shows on television instead of 50,000 things to watch. So, yeah, so I first, what really sparked it for me, I mean, I always wanted to be an actor and liked performing, and when I moved to New York and I did improv, like you did, and once I got into improv, then suddenly there was like a funnel, a place to put anything that I wanted to do, if it was stand-up or if it was impressions or accents or storytelling or serious work or whatever, it could all go into that bin. And I was lucky enough to be involved with a theater called the National Improv Theater, and we were in New York for 8 years or so, and gosh, it was great. And that really started me off. And then I started doing commercials and animation and movies and stuff after that.
Because you're one of those people, Jim, I didn't, when you walked in, it was just, you know, it's that classic thing of, okay, I've seen that guy do a million things. I've just seen that guy.
Yeah,
and you've just, you've been like
been
this
a pro for 30 years,
journeyman actor for 30 years. And it's
so with
really
the
impressive.
Improv experience and your time on Whose Line Is It?
Whose Line? I did a few episodes that they shot in New York. It was the British show shooting in New York.
Right.
Yeah.
That. Tell me about that. I'm in awe of that kind of.
Well, I don't know how you feel about it, Rose, but you know, that show is kind of a. I don't know. They packaged up improv very well. And we, at the time, my buddy Christopher Smith and I, who were invited to be part of the show, you know, we were very kind of our nose up in the air, because what is this show? You know, because it's this British show. Nobody knew it in the States. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are you doing? And they were having us do things like, well, you know, just sing a song and try to make everything rhyme. And we're like, oh. You know, meanwhile, we were improvising one-act plays and Broadway musicals and really trying to push the envelope of the art form. And they were saying, you know, make it funnier. And we're like, oh, all right, we'll do your little show. Very snooty about the whole thing, you know. And then we got our comeuppance, you know, when it ran for 1,000 years and made everybody a bucket of money. Not us, but other people.
But that's
later
sort of
on.
The thing, you know, you have to consider the geography. You're going to be on television, and people who are watching it on television have the attention span. You know, it's not the attention span of someone who's going to an improv club to take that whole ride with you.
That's
it's
true.
Right before.
I had the scariest audition for that, Whose Line Is It Anyway, in Chicago, and they said, do a scene, but have every single sentence be the title of a Beatles song.
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake.
I was
that's
out.
Ridiculous. Yeah, they had long auditions.
Hey,
too.
Jude. That was it. All right.
When can I leave the plane again and feel like I'm a Beatle rather than have you?
Oh, bloody blah, blah.
Jim, what is the show that you're doing?
Yes,
this
weekend.
The L. Ron Hubbard Golden Age Theater?
Worked at the Golden Age Theater quite often, and it's fun, and I, you know, I've worked with a lot of voice actors. I've been doing voice acting since 1984, and I find that a lot of guys got into the business, and women too, because of what they imagined the voiceover field would be like. And what they imagined was something out of 1948, you know, radio dramas and comedies and plays and funny voices and funny characters that just do not exist really in that way anymore. So the Golden Age Theater is an opportunity to bring to life the capacious library of L. Ron Hubbard, who wrote for all the pulps back in the 30s, 40s, right up until about 1950. Just hundreds and hundreds of terrific stories, adventure stories, mysteries, westerns,
so
not just
not
science
all
fiction.
Science fiction.
No, he was he's well known as one of the founders of science fiction.
Right.
Him and Isaac Asimov and Heinlein and Bradbury and those guys, they were the golden, you know, like the seven dwarves that hold up the Disney building. Right. But you know, the grand old man. But he wrote in every genre of the day. And since he was a pilot and a master mariner, he knew about boating and flying and aviation. And he was in World War II. He knew about armies and fighting. And he grew up in Montana, so he knew about the Old West and horses and cowboys and all that vocabulary, all those stories and all those scenes. So every story he tells has this ring of authenticity and detail that you just, you know, it's great. And characters, which actors love to play.
And is it presented as though the audience is attending a radio
sometimes
broadcast?
You know, it's up to the director a little bit. Like, for instance, this weekend, I intend to make it like, okay, this is 1948 or 1935, and we're coming to hear a radio show, and these are the actors that we're not going to be in costumes necessarily, although they do it that way sometimes. But we're going to treat it like, okay, we're going to stand around mics, we're going to hold scripts, and we're going to bring this thing to life. And audiences love it because they get to fill in and create. It's a great art form. And once you see it again, you go, oh yeah, what a great art form this is. And I, honestly, I've worked with some of the greatest voice talent in town and in the business, great figures, and they all go, ah, oh, this is what I got into this business to do. This is so much fun. There's not a dime in it, but it's so much fun, and artistically, it's great.
And it sounds wonderful, because one of the thing I mentioned earlier, how I met Shara Piven, we did a show, which is what I consider to be the great play for voices, which is Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood.
Right.
And
right.
That ran forever in Chicago. Michael Barta directed it, this tiny little theater
on
North Clark Street called the Cafe Voltaire. It was downstairs of a coffee house.
Of a vegan restaurant.
Yeah, a vegan restaurant, and it was all stone, like it was like a rec room,
it was
basement.
Like a little
cave. Yeah, oh, that's really vegan. It's all stone.
Stone.
It's all he served. Gravel.
I want to say that your mother was so lovely, and the grandmother on
and the Gilmore Girls, yes.
And she sponsored me for the Academy of Television.
No kidding.
Needed to be sponsored by
Sally world.
Struthers
really?
And Marion Rossi.
Yeah. That character was great. When I saw it, I went, oh my God, she's doing John Gielgud.
True. She was wonderful.
There is a hysterical outtake floating around the internet with Marion Ross and Henry Winkler.
Oh,
and
Henry
Winkler, yeah, and it's an outtake.
They're kind of necking.
And he just starts making out with her.
Really?
Oh, it's priceless, because the scene is going on and he just sort of comes up and he's like, you know, of course it's perfectly sweet, and he's nuzzling her neck and everything. And,
that's hilarious. Yes,
very,
I invite
funny.
You to see that on YouTube. It's very funny. I remember seeing it in 1977.
I want to throw this information out here. We'll do it again before the end of the hour, obviously. This is the show is A Lesson in Lightning.
Yes, and my wife is the narrator. She recorded it. This is it's an audio book also that will be released, I guess, later in the year. But my wife got to do the narration. She's a wonderful actress, Tamara Meskimen.
Tamara Meskimen. And the other people in the show, Travis Oates, Jimmy Weldon.
Travis Oates is the voice of Piglet in Disney shows. So.
Really?
So he's got a really high voice, but he's quite a large fellow. But he's got a high voice like this.
And Vincent Casso?
Vincent Casso, yeah.
Casso, okay. Yeah, Casso.
Young, up-and-coming internet sensation, yeah.
And the music by Chairman of the Chord. Mm-hmm. This is at the L. Ron Hubbard Golden Age Theater. That's 7051 Hollywood Boulevard in Hollywood, California. Website, goldenagetheater.com. Theater here is ER. Spelling.
Right.
Tickets and info, 323-798-1635. That's 323-798-1635. And also, there are a couple of websites they asked us to throw out here for other people want to get familiar with this.
For the audiobooks.
For the audiobooks. We have a couple here. GalaxyPress.com, WritersOfTheFuture.com, Golden Age Stories, and once again, Golden Age Theater. So we'll put that out there again before it's up. But that sounds fascinating. I had no idea that L. Ron Hubbard was, I thought, solely science fiction.
No, well known for that. And And I was impressed, too, because I actually directed the audiobook recordings of over 500 hours of L. Ron Hubbard published fiction.
Holy cow.
So I read everything, and it is spectacular stuff. Really interesting. Really, really interesting stuff. I like very much the mysteries. There's a whole series done about the Foreign Legion, which are terrific stories. They're just, I think I brought you one. I brought you a copy of one of the audiobooks here. These are all on goldenagestories.com.
The Falcon Killer.
Falcon Killer, I believe, is one of those. It's an adventure, and you just feel like you're right in there. And we did it, as I said, with great voice actors. We had Foley, we had music, we had sound effects, very authentic. We spared no expense, and it's quite nice.
Now, for A Lesson in Lightning, can you give a little thumbnail synopsis for the listeners?
Oh, yeah, it's fun. It's about a guy who's very, very educated in engineering. You know, he's a typical engineer. He knows all about wireless recording, which was the internet of the day, and but he's, you know, completely inexperienced in the ways of the world and real life. And so his father decides to make a man of him. So he sends him out on a freighter to be their radio operator, and it is apparently based on a true story. And then he, what's unbeknownst to the father is that this freighter is being set up for a disaster so that the guys that have taken over the ship can get the insurance money. It's a whole big scam. And so he is in dire straits and jeopardy, and he has to figure his way out, which he does using his intellect and brute force.
Oh, wow.
You know, they have Foley, Paul, and I know what that is.
I do, too.
They sometimes use celery to mimic bones breaking.
That's
really?
Right.
Yes.
And I know that I know, of course, there's the whole cellophane fire thing.
Oh, right.
Do you know that that's where the term steal my thunder comes from?
I didn't know that.
That Shakespeare had the Globe Theater, and they had a sound guy who brought his tin and would always do the sound effects of thunder. And he was also a playwright, but Shakespeare would not produce any of his plays because his plays were so terrible. They would not produce anything at the Globe. So the line was, Shakespeare won't produce my plays, but he will steal my thunder.
Ah. Yes. Nice. Remember the Marriott Lincolnshire?
Made that completely up.
The theater in Chicago, and they used to call the matinees the Forest Fire Matinee because all the little older people would unwrap their little butterscotch disc candies, crinkle, and it would sound like a little forest fire.
The Rose mentioned earlier the Laughter on the 23rd Floor that she did in Chicago, and I did the following cast. That's Rose and I met through friends, but she was doing that show at the same time, and I was in the cast that replaced her. And Ron Orbach, who has been on our show a number of times,
he was our Max Prince.
He was our and ours as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we got Joey Dioria, who replaced him, who was one of the first Bozo the Clown. But one time, woman, front row, not cellophane, one of the...
Enchiladas?
No. Canned ham.
Oh,
those accordion head nets things, like for a rainstorm.
Gosh.
You know,
a rain bonnet.
A rain bonnet. And each level just... And Ronnie Orbach just going to the end of the stage, just looking over, just like waiting. Just every and this is, we good? It was brilliant. Just very, very funny.
I'm very pleased to meet Rose and find out she's an impressionist. We should get you on our show. I have a web series now called The Impression Guys. We've had a lot of nice impressionist actresses and actors on it. It's not a sketch show. It's an actual story. And so
I would
cool.
love to be on it, especially if you just want me to imitate people in my family. That's really all.
Well, that's what we're looking for. We were looking for someone to do your family. Okay.
What is Paul does so well? What, yes, so my family. Mother. My mother's so proud.
What is the URL for that?
It's on the Soul Pancake channel on YouTube. That's Rainn Wilson's.
Soul as in fish or heart?
No,
and soul.
As in hot and so. Yeah, so. And that's Rainn Wilson's project.
Well, as long as you mention Rainn Wilson, I think I need to say that my husband's in the studio today, and he was one of the writers for Kid President, which is a Soul Pancake show.
Oh, exactly.
Really?
Same company.
It's a wonderful show, Kid President, on the Hub channel.
You see the way it all comes
it's
together?
It's all synergistic.
Synchronicity. Yeah. It's kismet. And it's also a coincidence.
And since you talked about your wife, I will also say that my husband draws a daily comic on a napkin and has a website called Meta Napkin that you should check out because there's over 700 drawings.
Can you spell that for us?
M-A-T-T-A Napkin.
M-A-T-T-A.
Meta Napkin. Speaking of Subway, it started when he was at the Subway and drew a little comic on a napkin of something that happened.
You didn't have the chicken, did you?
And he didn't have the chicken.
No, okay.
And he came home and showed it to me, and then he started drawing other things on napkins, and I said, please do this and put it up on the site.
You post those on your Facebook page.
Sometimes I do, yes. But I want everyone to know about it because it's very entertaining.
Yeah. Why does it matter?
His last name.
His last name. Yes. Okay, that makes sense.
What does it matter? My best
I thought of changing my last name to Rose Matta. I thought that would be a better stage name. What do you think of that? Rose Matta.
Yeah, because it's like the paint color, Rose Matter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
No, but
and Abdu has caused some problems, let's face it.
Has it? Huh?
Well, with the people constantly with the Yabba Dabba Doo and, you know.
See, I never would have thought of that.
They don't say Abdul.
They don't, no.
Yeah. It could go there.
Yes.
You know?
No, it has. It has.
It has?
Yeah. Oh, Traveling with the Last Name Abdu is my whole second show.
There was a writer named Nick Abdo for Happy
That's
Days.
That's right. I remember that.
Is it the same spelling?
No, it's I have two O's.
Two O's. Okay.
And it's Olivia, the singer from the original recording of Jesus Christ Superstar, Olivia Diabo.
Oh, yes. That's different.
You have shit stuck in my head. I can't remember my own, but I remember Olivia Diabo from the Brown, the original Jesus Christ Superstar album. Anyway, enough about it. It's that time, Michael.
It is.
It's that time. It's 5 minutes to the end of the show, and we have to ask our guests to share a funny and or embarrassing or both story from their performance lives. Rose, Jim, either one of you want to start?
Theater, television,
I'll be embarrassed first. I was working... sounds like a humble brag. I was working with Paul Newman on a thing that he was helping my theater troupe with. We were doing a little video thing, presentation, at the New York Reservoir. We had the scene by the reservoir in Manhattan. And I was supposed to be a blind man. I had a blind man cane. I was down the path. And I got so bored, as you are with films, and I was sort of pretending like I was going to throw this thing like a spear over into the water, and he saw me doing that. And he said to my friend next to him, he said, he's going to throw that right over the fence. I threw the blind man cane into the water, and it was such a necessary prop. And it was my most embarrassing.
And did they have to fish it out?
Yes.
Or?
A grip went over the fence, walked into the water supply, and fished out my blind man. And Paul Newman laughed and laughed.
Paul Newman laughed. Oh, he lived in the neighboring town from when I'm from Ridgefield, Connecticut, and he was right next to in Westport.
Do you know the inn at Ridgefield?
Oh, yes.
My Uncle Henry.
I tended bar at Touchstones, which was right down the street from the Inn of Ridgefield, about a block away. Wow. I'm telling you. And I have a website where I do cartoons on napkins.
Yeah. Nice. Wait a minute. Wait a darn minute.
I'm sorry. Rose, what do you got?
Well, I mean, left her on the 23rd floor. I had to answer the phone call. Ira. I remember that in the second act when Ira, just get here. The audience is hysterical laughing. I have no idea why. And I look down and see that the curly cord connecting the vintage phone has come free. So I'm just holding it. And then I couldn't think of what. I just held the cord back together and went, we have a terrible connection. I can barely hear you, Ira.
Beautiful.
And that was one of them.
Beautiful.
And the other was my missed entrance, where there were, it was 17 minutes into the play, where Carol Wyman's supposed to come in. Have you heard the news? It was on Edward R. Murrow last night, you know, and I missed my entrance. And they were on stage, and the guys did not say one word. They did not cover with one line. Oh. And finally, later,
they just sat there.
And Bill Brown, I think it was 2 minutes, and Bill Brown said to me, well, the only person that could have helped us was the person that was late.
Nice excuse.
It's funny that you say that, because that prop gave us trouble, too.
That phone?
The exact same thing that happened
Crazy
to you
phone.
Happened to Donna Foulkes.
Uh-huh.
Who
took
replaced
over
you.
Me.
Yes. The same thing. She's talking on the phone, and the cord is just swinging on her side.
That vintage phone. And I heard that Bill Dick used to say to her, Rose didn't do it like that. Rose did it like this. And finally she went, well, then just call me Rose Abdon't. I'm not Rose Abdu. I'm Rose Abdon't. And then I turned that into the name of my second show.
Really?
Rose Abdu and Rose Abdon't, because I liked it so much. Which is all about my last name and people mistaking it for a terrorist. But that's a whole separate show, kids. A separate show. I'm sure I have more embarrassing stories. I just couldn't think of any of them.
No,
very funny. You know, he mentioned Paul Newman. My career in public relations is long, and I worked for a company called Rogers and Cowan.
Yes.
And Paul Newman was one of the
clients
with that company. And early on in my experience there, he took me everywhere, my boss. And we went to Universal Studios one day to meet. He said, we're just going to meet one of the clients. I want to introduce you to him, because he was working
boss?
On his company. Paul Block.
Okay, yes.
And we stood at the front gate to wait for him to come through. And Paul Newman came through in an I didn't know it was going to be Paul Newman, but he was in a convertible. And I had met many celebrities, and I had a career in television and film myself. And my boss says, Michael, I couldn't get anything out. I couldn't find the word. I was so stunned to see this movie star, that close to me.
You were gobsmacked.
I was. Gobsmacked. I was indeed. And I have never reacted that way to anybody since or prior to that.
Pretty unique. Pretty unique.
Yes, it is.
And just like one of those just beyond, I mean, in addition to being a charismatic presence, beyond good looking.
Oh,
Paul Newman is just
far
like
beyond.
Chiseled out
way
marble.
Over, way across the line.
Good looking.
Yeah.
We will buy any of his salad dressings just for that little sketch
just,
picture
just
of
to
him.
Look at
he's
him.
So
even
handy.
A bad little cartoon of him is
even with a funny racist Italian hat.
Yeah. Hey, I'll buy his Fig Newman.
Is it racist if it's true?
It's racist because it's true. That's hysterical.
Well, how nice to have you.
What
guys
a pleasure having
show.
Both of you on.
It's very charming.
Can we come back next Thursday?
The last 30 seconds. You can. Last 30 seconds. The show is A Lesson in Lightning. L. Ron Hubbard. This is at the L. Ron Hubbard Golden Age Theater, 7051 Hollywood Boulevard. Tickets, 323-798-1635 or Golden Age Theater. Theater is ER.com, GoldenAgeTheater.com. What a pleasure.
Yeah,
really
yeah,
enjoyed
pleasure.
This.
Indeed.
Thank
best
you
flew
for
by.
Us. Thank
flew
you.
By.
Yeah, and Michael,
did fly by.
Good best of puppy luck
thank
to you.
Thank you. Puppy
and
luck.
Did you have to bring them, though, here? Did you have to?
I should have. They would have come. They would have sat here quietly, though. Yes. Yes, they would have.
All right. And, John, pleasure having you here
yes,
as well.
Yes, thank
Rose's
you.
Rose's other half. And we will see you all next week.
Absolutely. See you, Paul.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.